was playing with the grandkids, so I was having fun back there. Well, Eric, of course, we're going to hit each other, so I scratched out three verses to use because they've already been hit, but that's okay. Miss Stella over there likes to tell me, you talk too much about history, and I didn't have anything about history today, but I added one just for you. So Calvin Coolidge was our 30th president, and he wouldn't become president today. Very quiet, just the opposite of what we see today of our presidential candidates. And he was elected. He went to church one Sunday morning, and he came out, and reporters were outside. And they asked him, did you enjoy services? He said, yes. And they said, what did he talk about? And he said, he talked about sin. And that's it. He started walking off, and the reporter said, well, what did he say about it? Typical silent Calvin Coolidge way, he said he was against it. So Eric and I said, what's he talking about? And he said sin, and I said too. I asked him if he was for or against it. So I guess we'll talk more about being against sin today. If you could, and I don't want you to write it down because it feels too personal when you do that. Think about your last three sins. Think about your last three sins. Sal Cimino shook his head no back there, so he didn't want to. But do we even know what sin is? At this point in this world, do we have any idea what sin is? Or is it so blurred in this world that we don't even comprehend it? Because we look at Hebrews 11, we look at people wandering in caves, and that is so foreign to us that that line doesn't even seem to be there anymore. How much complaining do we see? It's constant. Our job, place, politics, everything. Life in general. It's constant complaining. Well, today I want to look at, and we're going to go back to the Exodus, to our supposed spiritual forefathers, ancestors. And even though they saw all of the miracles that they did, how just one little thing that maybe we don't even say is sin cost them a chance at their promised land, which is our future in a different scenario, but cost them their chance at the promised land. And when we look at it, it's hard to say, yeah, that's sin. Because when you look at the commandments and everything, well, it's not in there. But it gets into the New Testament, into the covenant of what is sin. And it shows that maybe a sin that's not in the Ten Commandments, something there is not actual sin. So let's look at the Israelites. And one thing about it was attitude. And I think it comes down to attitude with a lot of our lives. We can be a positive person. We can be a negative person. And we're going to look at the Israelites several times where they had just experienced something that none of us do. We have to rely on faith and on this book. And yet they saw it firsthand, and then like this, boom, they turn around and say, oh, well, forget that. Now I want something else. And it's going to look at, as we end these holy days, we're looking at ourselves. I know for me, I'm like that. It takes me that quick or that quickly to change and have a bad attitude. I may get something, and it's human nature that I think all of us have to work on. So let's look at some examples. We have 10 examples of the Israelites complaining, even after something they had just experienced, that hopefully if we saw it, we would say there's no doubt that God's with us. And yet they didn't. So let's look at that. The first time that the Israelites really complained, they had already asked, please send someone to help us. They're in captivity. They're slaves. And they ask for God to send them someone. And, of course, we know the story of Moses. And Moses goes. He doesn't want to either, but he intercedes. And he asks Pharaoh to release them to go worship God. And Pharaoh says no. And he also says, we're going to make it harder. We're going to make it harder on you. You have to go collect your own straw. for your brick, and it's going to take you longer, but you have to work just as hard as you did before. Let's look at Exodus 5 and verse 20 to start this out. So the Israelites start complaining here. Now, they really hadn't seen miracles very much at this point. So they go to Moses. Moses made their life harder. And verse 20 of Exodus 5 says, "Then as they came out from Pharaoh, they met Moses and Aaron, who stood there to meet them." Verse 21, "And they said to them, 'Let the Lord look on you and judge, because you have made us abhorrent in the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of his servants, to put a sword in their hand to kill us.'" Their life becomes a little more difficult at this point. At this point, their life becomes a little more difficult. Let's take this and look at our own lives. Is this not what our lives are? Because I tell these kids in middle school, "Oh, this is rough. It's the easiest part of your life ever, by far. It's going to get more difficult for you." Same way in our personal life. If on our job, if you do a good job, do you get other tasks added to you? Usually. A lot of times you don't get paid for it. It's part of life. You do a good job, you may get rewarded, you may not. But what our goal is, have a positive attitude, do your job. Just do your job. It's not that difficult. Look at your other option. "I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to get by." When they have cuts, who's going to go? You're gone. You are gone because you're not carrying your load. You're not doing what you're supposed to. And you may be homeless. Now, you want that, "Oh, I've got a little more work." Or do you want that, "Where's my next meal coming from?" That's the difference. There was a guy that he actually went to church with us years ago. And he had retired from TVA. When he retired, he didn't have enough pension to actually just fully retire. So he ended up working for us for a while. I worked for Dad. And he always complained, and I will say, wasn't a very good worker. But he always complained about when he was at TVA, put 20 years in, never moved up one step in 20 years at TVA. And he said, "Oh, it was terrible. These young guys would come in." He said they'd put us all to shame. They'd be working hard. And then next thing you know, they were promoted. And he didn't get it. He didn't understand. That's how it works. But he mentioned several times, and he even mentioned once, that they're on the side of a project. They find a quarter down in the dirt. And he said, "Oh, I took the rest of the day digging around that dirt for quarters." Well, that's not your job, but that's the mindset that he had. Our mindset, whether we like it or not, life's going to get more difficult. Because if it's not, then God's not testing us with fire. He's not putting us through the things that we're going to need if we do face that end time. The second time, and this is a time that they've already experienced all of these miracles. The children of Israel complained at the Red Sea. And this is a big one because of what they had just experienced. All of the plagues, all the firstborn males in Egypt were killed, and all the Israelites were saved. They had experienced every single bit of this. And yet, what happens when the next difficulty comes? Let's go to Exodus 14 and verse 10. Again, everything that we've observed early this week represents this coming out of Egypt, coming out of sin, and what they went through. But Exodus 14:10, they're going to run into an issue here. It says, "And when Pharaoh drew near," so he's bringing his armies in to destroy the Israelites, "the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them." So they're stuck between the Egyptian army and the Red Sea. "So they were very afraid." Well, I think naturally you would be. "And the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. Then they said to Moses, 'Because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you so dealt with us to bring us out of Egypt? Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians, for it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness? I don't remember seeing that, and Eric talked about this, that they want to go back at this point. First difficulty, I want to go back. You've made it hard on us. It's an attitude here. Again, all of the things that they had witnessed, we've never seen any of that. We might have had something that we perceive as a miracle, or it may have been a miracle, but we didn't see all of this stuff that they had just experienced in our lives. First difficulty, the attitude changes. And that's something I have to work on, because it doesn't take me long to get a bad attitude. Sometimes I think I'd be better off if I just get mad and get over it, but sometimes I let stuff linger. But we need to watch that. When we look at our lives and we see an issue, again, sin comes in every package you can think of. Some of us, some sins are a whole lot easier to overcome than other people. You look at other people and say, that's not a problem for me. And yet something that we struggle with, someone else may say it's not a problem. So it's not, we don't all fit. We're not all yellow pencils in this case. Every sin is different. We all have to overcome different things. But when we look at it, are we not the most blessed people that ever lived on earth? I was thinking about this the other night when we were at the Night to Be Much Observed. It would have been very special for everyone. Even growing up, I remember, boy, we really get to eat a great meal that night. And the other night, I caught myself thinking, you know, we can eat like this at any time. And it shows how maybe we're spoiled beyond what other people ever have. This Bible right here, how many translations do you have on you right now? Grab your phone, grab your tablet, whatever, and we get every translation ever. We're the most blessed people that ever lived. And sometimes we take that for granted because, again, this world, sin is so obscure, or there's no fine line anymore with what sin is. What we consider sin, the world says you better accept it. So it's very hard to live in this world and say we're going to put sin out of our lives. What do we have to complain about? We can hate this world because God hates the sins that's out there. But what do we have to complain about in our personal lives? We're not being tested any more than anyone else. You can find examples of people that go through a lot more than we ever do. So they get through the Red Sea. They're extremely happy there. Extremely, as we'll see in a minute. And then you turn around the next time, oh, woe is me again. It's like Job. Or not Job, Jonah, where he complains constantly about everything. I just want to die. It's almost like the Israelite attitude. The third time they complain is they complain about the bitter water in Marah. Exodus 15, verse 23. Exodus 15, verse 23. It says, now, when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore, the name of it was called Marah, and the people complained against Moses, saying, what shall we drink? Go back just even a week. They had just experienced the Egyptian army being destroyed. And if you look at the verses right before this, in Exodus 15, they praise God with songs about how he delivered them. Attitude was great. They were praising God. They were thanking him. And then the next big issue, oh, woe is me. We want to die again. Did you bring us out here just to let us die? We may experience where God helps us, gets us through a situation. We may be very happy, but then the next time something happens to us, woe is me again. My wife loves Fiddler on the Roof. I had never seen it. And before Sabbath last night, we were watching part of it. And the main male character, He was constantly talking to God, and it seemed like he was constantly complaining. I thought, man, if that's the Israelites, then that stereotype continued through, because he was constantly complaining about God. Do we complain every time we get hit with something? Because again, if we don't get hit with trials, we're not going to be strong enough for what's coming. We're not going to be strong enough. So we're going to have these. Have to watch that little leavening that leavens the whole lump. That little complaint one time, it's easier to complain again once we see that. So God takes care of them, gives them water, and doesn't take very long before, hey, another issue arises. Fourth time they complain is they complain about being hungry. Complain about being hungry. It's not thirsty anymore, it's hungry. Exodus 16, verses 2 and 3. And this is what Eric actually talked about. Exodus 16, verses 2 and 3. The whole congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. Verse 3. And the children of Israel said to them, "Oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat, and when we ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Again, another problem. Let's start complaining about it. You ever found that complaining does any good at all? To whine about something doesn't help us very often, does it? Now, at this point, I have two people that I've thought about that come to mind. Do you know someone that you see like this? Oh, the sky's blue. Well, yeah, but it's going to rain. It's going to be miserable today. It's like that Debbie Downer skit from Saturday Night Live. Just no matter what it is, you put a negative spin on it. I had my mom could tell me better. She's either a great aunt or a second cousin or something, but we would see her at family reunions. She was related to my dad. And you didn't dare ask her how she was doing, because she was dying every single time you talked to her. And I don't know how old she lived, but she lived at least 30, 40 years after the first time I heard she was dying. So she did okay. And we had a lady in Worldwide Church way back. You didn't ask her how she was doing, because she, guess what? She's on her last leg, and she may still be alive, as far as I know. But this was 40 years ago at least. Don't be that person. Don't be that person. We had a matter of fact, just thinking about Dalton, we had a young man that stayed with us. His mom had, I don't know, 25 kids or something. She just kept having kids. Nevlin's getting on me. She probably had 10, though, honestly. But she left one of her kids with us that was, I don't know, Dalton or Logan's age. And, man, he brought our whole house down the whole time. It was just this negative, like that, what, Eeyore, was it? Just this, brought our whole house down, and we couldn't get rid of him. She had so many kids, she just left him with us. We finally had to call and say, hey, come get your kid. And I think she did that with a bunch of other people. So she had to go gather her flock and bring them back once she had this kid. And I think she had three or four after this. Don't be that. And don't be around those people. And they do bring you down sometimes when this happens. Don't be that person, and try to stay away from people like this, because they will bring you down. They will definitely do that. Look at the fifth time that they complained. So they're mad because the water's not good. Then they're mad because they're hungry. Well, God takes care of that, gives them food that sustains them throughout their travels. And now the fifth time, the people complain about being thirsty. Water's not bitter this time. There's no water. Exodus 17, verse 3. Exodus 17, verse 3. It says, and the people thirsted there for water, and the people complained against Moses and said, why is it You have brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst. Woe is me. Once again, has complaining ever helped your situation? I know my wife likes to come home and vent about work sometimes, and I'll do it, but I'm kind of more quiet. I just want to be mad for a minute and be over it. But yes, sometimes venting helps, but just complaining constantly about this isn't right, doesn't help us. Or is it just a need that we want sympathy from others? Because that gets into the whole, it's all about me, which is not why Christ died by any situation. Watch a little kid, because Waylon over here, he'll fall down, bump his head or something, and he'll look around, and if no one's paying attention, he'll just go on about his business. But if someone looks at him like, he wants attention, right? They'll start crying. That's just what little children do. They get that attention. They like it. Same way with us. If someone coddles us, you poor baby, when you're experiencing something. Is it just for us that we're complaining? Because for the Israelite, it was just nonstop complaining about everything that went wrong. We can pray to God for help, but that's not what the Israelites did. They immediately started turning. They complained to Moses, complained about God. He brought us out here to die. At some point, God's going to get tired of that attitude. And you see, and if you look, is complaining a sin? Well, it's not technically mentioned as a sin, but it's the whole attitude. Did God punish them for attitude? Because again, sin is so blurred. We know what killing, we know what adultery, we know what all that is. But does sin go deeper than that? Because here, God does, at some point, God's going to lose his temper, if you will. Or God's going to say, enough. All right? Let's look at the sixth time, because God's starting to become a little irritated with this attitude. The sixth time, Israel complains to Aaron that they need a new God. So this is when the Ten Commandments are given. Moses is up on Mount Sinai. And he doesn't come down when they think he should. So now the Israelites, I like the way this is phrased because it makes it even more sound worse than it was. Exodus 32, verse 1. Again, everything that they had experienced. Because go try to live in a desert. See how long you're going to last without help. And God's given them this help while they're wandering around. Exodus 32, verse 1, it said, "Now when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, 'Come, make us gods that shall go before us.'" I like this part. "For as for this Moses," pretty condescending way to say that, "for as this Moses guy, the man who brought us up out of the lands of Egypt, we don't know what's become of him." Everything they experienced, and the first time, second time, third time, fourth time, every time something goes wrong, that attitude changes. That attitude goes into, I'm going to complain about everything that happens. Have we considered in our own lives that if you're going to have this attitude, at some point God will say enough's enough? Because that's what he does here. You know, at this point, the Levites were ordered to go out and kill 3,000 people that day. God says he should be first in our lives, and he means it. It's not just the first great commandment for no reason. How can we have him first in our lives if we complain about everything? How can he be first in our lives if all we're doing is complaining? Because this gets into Christ, the new covenant, loving one another. If we're just here to obey God to get to the kingdom, then why did Christ die? Because he taught something about we should love God, we should love each other more. It's deeper than just, I'm here to save myself. Sin is getting into the attitude, into the heart. It's a lot more than, oh, I didn't go kill anyone today. Well, I didn't sin. It's a lot deeper than that. Let's look at the seventh time. Oh, by the way, I think it's hilarious that Aaron builds this gold calf, comes down, and his excuse is, we just threw all this gold together and this calf came out. Never seen that happen in any crafts area in the world, but that just calf just happened to come out at that point. Seventh time, this is when God takes off his belt for the Israelites. When they continued to complain, God had many of them consumed by fire. God had many of them consumed by fire. Let's go to Numbers 11 for this. Numbers 11, we'll read verses 1 through 6. So God's reached his limit with them at this point. It says, when they continued to complain, it displeased the Lord, for the Lord heard it and his anger was aroused. So the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some of them in the outskirts of the camp. Then the people cried out to Moses. Good time to complain about him, and then, oh, we need your help. And when Moses prayed to the Lord, the fire was quenched. So he called the name of the place Taberah because the fire of the Lord had burned among them. Now the mixed multitude who were among them yielded to intense craving. So the children of Israel also wept again and said, who will give us meat to eat? Again, they're going back to Egypt here. We remember the fish which we ate freely in Egypt, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, the garlic. But now our whole being is dried up. There's nothing at all except this manna before our eyes. Remembered how they complained in Egypt. They hated it. They wanted out. They begged for someone. They give it to them. All they've done is complain. And now, this manna, this is terrible. Kept you alive, but now they complain. And God lost it at that point with them. Not thankful, want to complain every time something happens. Now, are we that way? We live in that land of milk and honey. No one on earth. Read Solomon, what he ate. Every one of us can go a mile down the road from here and get everything that he had. And hey, we have better spices. We have everything. We have things that even he, his mind would have been blown with. And yet, do we sometimes complain about what we have? If we complain, because I doubt that those that wandered in caves would have complained about what we have to eat or our lifestyle. I doubt that they would have complained about it. But at some point, God may take his belt off with us, like he did with the Israelites occasionally. If he's our father, there is punishment sometimes, and it may come to that. Now, the eighth time that there are complaints, and this is more about the leadership of Moses, but Miriam and Aaron complained about Moses' leadership. Just go over one chapter, Numbers 12. Numbers 12, verses 2 and 3. So they said, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also? Now, this ought to tell you the relationship that Moses had with God, because the Lord heard it. And it says here, now the man Moses was very humble, more than all men who were on the face of the earth. So what happens here? Well, Miriam is given leprosy for speaking against Moses' leadership. Now, God appointed Moses. God appointed Moses, and yet she received something that at that time was highly contagious, and you had to be put away for a while. This gets into our attitudes because, yes, it's hard not to get involved with, we have an election coming. It's hard not to feel one way or the other about it. But is there a reason that whoever the next president is, fill in the blank, that person's in there? Or do we decide this is what I want? Or is it what God wants? Because no matter where you stand, Democrat, Republican, let's face it, this government's a disaster. Anyway, no matter how you look at it. But is there a reason that person is in there? If God needs to establish his kingdom, then he may be putting in the right people that in our minds, we say, no, that's not what we want. But in here, it's obvious God expects us to pray for our leadership one way or the other. There's a reason that person's elected. It's better to stay away from getting negative about, oh, he's a Democrat, he's a Republican, whatever. Until God's kingdom's established, that shouldn't even be part of our lives. We just pray for our leaders and pray for the kingdom. That comes first. That comes first. All right, let's go to the ninth time. And there are several others in here. I just took some of the larger ones. But they get to the promised land. They go in, they scout, and they find these people are big. These people, their food's wonderful, all of this. They're too big and strong for us. Everything they had experienced, most powerful army in the world had been wiped out. Every time they needed food, it was given to them. And now when they reach the place that God said, this is what I'm giving you, they say it's too hard. The ninth one, the people complained about how difficult it looked to enter the land. Numbers 14. Numbers 14, verses 1 through 4. It says, so all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, here we go again. Over and over. If only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in this wilderness. So as bad as that wilderness, oh, this is even worse. Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? So they said to one another, let us select a leader and return to Egypt. We looked at our lives this week and the problems we all face. We all have different, if you will, demons, if you say, issues that we have to face. We don't turn back to it and say, I want that again. We fight against it. We may not always succeed with whatever our own challenges are, but it's a constant battle. And yet the Israelites, let's go back. Let's look back on that, just like Lot's wife. Let's turn around and look back. That's not what we have to do. Every year, as we examine ourselves, did we grow a little bit this year? I mean, that's our goal, is to overcome sin and get a little each year. Get a lot, because you see people that, oh, all in one year, come into church just all out. And then what happens? You see so many of them fall out because they don't run that distance race. It's a sprint when they get to the, oh, I can't go anymore. We see that. This is our life. This isn't one year. This is our entire lives that we have. As we sit here today on a Sabbath, everyone out there doing what they do, living the way they want to live, we're walking that straight and narrow path. We're in here on the Sabbath when everyone else is out enjoying whatever their things are. We don't want to return to that. We don't want to return to Egypt. What's the Lord's Prayer say? Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. That's first. That's the most important thing. If we want to be a part of God's kingdom, we don't go back there. We don't go back to Egypt. We don't go back to living the way we do. We are on this straight and narrow path. We're on the straight and narrow path. Now, let's look at the 10th time. God actually has to show himself at this point. Number 10, the people complained again, and they want to kill Moses at this point. You would think with what they've seen and see the relationship with Moses and God, not real smart. Not real smart to say we're going to kill this Moses guy. Numbers 14 and verse 10. It says, and all the congregation said to stone them with stones. Now the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of meeting before all the children of Israel. God loses it at this point. And you think of what it took for Moses, as much, let's face it, as much abuse as he took from these people, for him to intercede for them. Because God says, all right, I'll wipe them all out. We'll start over with you. And from our human standpoint, hey, that sounds pretty good. I'm front and center. But Moses intercedes for these people. Shows he was a very humble person. He's asking as much abuse. They wanted to kill him. As he took, that he intercedes and says, please don't do this. Please don't do this. And it's even worse to think, you know, from our human viewpoint, as much as Moses went through with these people, God didn't allow him to enter because he made one little mistake. We don't understand that, but it's God's mind. It's not ours. But Moses interceded for these people that did not appreciate anything he did, constantly complained, and yet he did it. And God loses his temper at this point. There will come a time, if we have this attitude, if we complain constantly, that God will put a stop to it. Or maybe we don't reach that promised land just because sin is deeper than thou shalt not kill. Sin is our attitudes, because the New Testament talks about the heart. That's what this is. This is that attitude, that heart, that is the New Testament. That is Christ talking about the love one another, love God. It's about that. How do we put a stop to this attitude? I just want to go through four quick points. I'm sorry, three points about how we stop this in our lives. 3 points, how do we stop this? The first one's very simple. It's the first great commandment. Put God first in your life. Put God first in your life. If your focal point is not on you, you don't have time to complain. You don't have time to sit and dwell, woe is me, woe is me. You put God first, then your attitude, your mindset already is, I'm not going to complain. How can you take the time to pray and study the way God wants if we're worrying about our own lives? Think of that, consider the lilies. God takes care of sparrows. He's going to take care of you. Do you need everything that the world has? Not necessarily. Hebrews 11, those people, we don't worry about their future. Should we worry about ours if we have a different attitude or if we're like the Israelites? The second one, second great commandment, put others ahead of yourself. Put others ahead of yourself. There was a little girl. She was 12 years old. She was fighting cancer. She was at the Children's Hospital in Orange County, California. When she got to the hospital, she saw that almost this was a cancer treatment wing, that she saw that all the other little kids were just like her, going through very serious trials in their lives. But she decided, let's see if I can help these other kids. And she started filling up these little mason jars with like little miniature Beanie Babies, little things that each of the other kids could have. Now, she died in 2012. She didn't make it through what she had. But by the time she died, she had filled 3,000 jars for other kids that were sent all around California at that time. The story got out. A lot of other people started volunteering. With the time she died, over 80,000 little jars had been filled and given to different people in the world. Now, this is a little girl who didn't get a fair shake, did she? 12 years old, she's going to die. And yet, rather than have this woe is me, she chose to help others. And from what I saw from her mother, she talked about positive attitude all the way to death, which that's hard to believe that a 12-year-old would have this. But she put others ahead of herself and had that attitude at the end of her life. That's what we have to do. Put others ahead of ourselves. You think you have problems? Go find somebody that has worse problems. It's not hard to do most of the time. It's not hard. The third one, another biblical principle, pull the beam out of your own eye. For me, it's easy to find fault with other people. I can find that real quickly. But I may know it, but I don't want to admit I've got bigger problems than they do. Pull the beam out of your own eye. Remember, my father went to Sportsman's Club one time back in Worldwide, way back. We're talking, I don't know, mid-70s, early 80s. And he came back and he said, nope, not going to go there. Because he sat in and one of the men made the comment that, I can't give a speech, but I can sure tell you what you did wrong with yours. And my dad said, nope, not going with that kind of attitude in there. Because he thought that was the wrong attitude. We have our own problems. Pull the beam out of your own eye before you like to point out someone else's. But we all fall short. I'm going to end with a verse and a short story here. It says a young couple moved into a new neighborhood. The next morning, while they were eating breakfast, the young woman saw her neighbor hanging the washing outside. That laundry's not very clean. She doesn't know how to wash correctly. Perhaps she needs better laundry soap. Her husband looked on, didn't say a word. Every time her neighbor hung her washing out to dry, the young woman made the same comments. A month later, the woman was surprised to see a nice clean wash on the line and said to her husband, "Look, she's finally learned how to wash correctly. I wonder who taught her to do this." Husband looked up and he said, "I got up early this morning and cleaned our windows." Pull the beam out of your own eye. Let's conclude with Philippians 2, because Eric stole my final verse, 1 Corinthians 5. Philippians 2. Philippians 2, verses 14 and 15. Because we live in a very sorry world here, and this is what God wants from us. Philippians 2, verses 14 and 15. Do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. It's hard sometimes to not get that negative attitude. But, I hate to do this, but I'm going to quote somebody I don't want to quote. That's my brother. I don't want to do that. But he used to say, how did it go? It's attitude, not aptitude, that determines altitude. It's attitude. It's like that movie Cool Hand Luke. Get your mind right. All right, so brother, as we come into the end of the holy days, let's do our best to look at ourselves, but look at even deeper, to not have that attitude that the Israelites have, but to have that love for God and love for one another.